Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We appreciate all the great stuff you're doing for the community, that's for sure. Hey, this program is sponsored in part by the Seafarers International Union and the Maritime Trades Department, both in the Washington, D.C. area. We appreciate their support very much. Joining us today, we've got Josh Schwartz. He is with the West Virginia AFL-CIO. Josh, welcome back.
Hey, pal. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Oh, brother, it's always a pleasure. We appreciate it. And by the way, we appreciate the support that you guys from West Virginia send. We're always glad to have you, and it's exciting to talk about some of the things going on. Josh, you know, West Virginia was pretty decisive in the election, but it seems like people have had a chance to take a real close look, and opinions are changing pretty dramatically, aren't they?
Well, President Trump won here by a greater margin than almost every state. In fact, there was only one other state in which he won by a wider margin. So we've seen this transition over the last, 10 to 15 years of moving from blue to red, and that certainly has brought about a significant number of challenges. Our legislature is now controlled by anti-worker Republicans. But there is, there is light at the end of the tunnel, and we're seeing it right now in this debate about the health care law. I mean, arguably no state benefited more than from the Affordable Care Act than West Virginia. We put over 200,000 people on health insurance rolls that were not on health insurance in any form or capacity prior to that. And now we've got this piece of legislation being debated in different versions or whatever, being discussed in Congress that will likely, eliminate that coverage for those that were able to get coverage through the expansion. But also, Charles, this is the thing that we've been driving home here in West Virginia. There are so many other things that come along with that. For example, the most recent projections from the CBO score says that we're going to lose 13,000 jobs. Now, we're a small state. 13,000 jobs will have a crippling effect on our economy.
Josh, wait a second. Let me ask you this. Are we talking you're going to lose 13,000 healthcare jobs in West Virginia in the rural hospitals where, oh my God, with this opioid epidemic, you need them?
Almost all of those jobs will be healthcare related. Now, some are downstream jobs as a result of it, but the overwhelming majority of those jobs will be in the health care industry, and we're talking about the state that has the biggest crisis as it relates to opioid addiction. Absolutely, Charles. It would be devastating. It would be devastating.
You know, I hate to say this. I don't like being morbid, but this is going to kill people.
There is absolutely no doubt it will kill people in West Virginia because we're going to have to close rural hospitals and clinics and drug treatment facilities and other providers because the majority of those folks are able to, or providers are able to stay open because of services paid for through Medicaid. And when we start rolling that back, then they're going to have to close the doors and people are not going to have access to care and they're going to die. There's no question about it. They're going to die.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I don't know what your governor can do. I don't know what your state legislators, Republican or Democrat, they should be up in arms about this. And I don't know what your senators and congressmen can do.
Well, Senator Joe Manchin has been perfect and great on this subject and on this issue. He came out in opposition early. He's been traveling the state talking about this issue. Our other United States Senator is Shelley Moore Capito, and she just happens to be one of the few moderate Republicans who will in the end, I think, make or break whether this thing becomes law or not. So there's been a lot of attention, a lot of focus toward Senator Capito and, her vote ultimately if they get to one on this particular issue. She's made it clear that she's concerned about the loss of, 200,000 people. Loss of health care for 200,000 people. She's also concerned about the pre-existing condition clause, the discrimination clause, as I call it. So we'll see in the end. Now, I'll tell you, the new bill was leaked today. There's a lot more money in there for opioid addiction. I don't know whether that is going to be enough for her to vote yes on this thing, but we're going to keep our pressure, the pressure that we have and a lot of other community organizations have put into efforts here to educate the public so that Shelley Moore votes no on this thing.
Let me ask you a question. I know that a lot of mine workers were really madder than a wet cat at Hillary Clinton, and I get it, and I understand. Are they softening their thoughts and positions, and are other people in West Virginia, now that they've had a chance to see what they've gotten and where what it's getting them, I mean, are they really changing?
Well, that's a good question, and I'm not sure. I think it may be a little too early to tell, but certainly, you know, before he was elected, then candidate Trump came to Charleston, West Virginia, and filled a civic arena here in Charleston, full of coal miners, laid off coal miners, and folks related to coal miners, and promised every single one of them he's going to bring their job back. And the reality is, he has now been elected, and he hasn't brought their job back. I mean, the market has turned around a little bit for coal, but it has nothing to do with what the president can or can't do.
Right.
I mean,
you know, he came to Pittsburgh and promised to put up steel mills at the point. You know, I mean, it's like, well, you can put them up at the point, okay, and you can build a steel mill, but when people like himself aren't willing to buy American steel for his buildings, what's the point?
Well, I was just in our northern panhandle, Wheeling, Weirton area, and I don't see the steel mills up and running like they were 30 years ago.
Right.
So, you know, he made a bunch of promises on the campaign trail. He cannot deliver. I think over time people are going to realize that. And, you know, I don't know what that means, except that, you know, what we're trying to do is get back to focusing on economic issues, because at the end of the day, the Democratic Party is much better on economic issues than any other party or any other entity. And we've just got to keep driving that home. And we're going to get there. We just have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Josh, listen, we're going to take a short break. We'll come back and we'll talk some more, okay?
Sure. Sounds
fantastic.
Great.
It's Josh Sword from the West Virginia AFL-CIO. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
This week, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau announced a rule that consumer groups say is a big win for Americans who want to settle corporate wrongdoing in court. The rule bans companies from using forced arbitration clauses in order to avoid lawsuits, meaning consumers can once again band together in class action suits. Members of Congress already are looking to dismantle the rule, but Larry Shannon with the Washington State Association for Justice says it's necessary.
This rule restores consumer protection. It ensures real accountability for these companies, and it acts as a deterrent to keep them from engaging in this kind of behavior in the first place.
Shannon uses the example of a cell phone company in Washington that was taking $35 fees without explanation. A single consumer would have a hard time justifying paying thousands of dollars in legal fees to recoup the money. A class action lawsuit would make the case more affordable. Opponents of the rule say arbitration is a cheaper and faster way for consumers to get justice. Shannon says forced arbitration clauses also keep cases out of court, making it harder to identify bad actors. A scandal at Wells Fargo involving the opening of fake accounts last year highlighted the need for this rule. In that case, consumers were blocked from suing the bank because of a forced arbitration clause in their contracts. Shannon says nursing homes use these clauses in a more troubling way.
You don't get into nursing homes unless you have signed away your right to hold the nursing home accountable for the treatment to your loved ones. And I think that's an outrage, and this rule addresses that as well.
Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas says he started drafting a resolution to rescind this new rule. Shannon hopes it stays in place, saying forced arbitration has become a license to steal for the companies that use it.
Who's Congress going to stand up for here? Are they going to stand up for consumer protection for people in America, or are they going to go to bat for Wall Street and banks and financial institutions and big employers who abuse these clauses?
For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedov.
While college and university tuitions go up and up, higher education administrators have been spending less on students' education. Today, only a quarter of higher ed faculty has secure full-time jobs. The rest are so-called adjunct faculty, hired on a per-course temporary basis, often with no benefits, and are paid just $2,700 on average per course. Dedicated adjunct faculty across the country are joining together and fighting back in defense of their students' future. In Pittsburgh, they have formed the Adjunct Faculty Association, affiliated with United Steelworkers Union. Adjuncts and students all over the city are joining the AFA to achieve the goal of providing high-quality, affordable higher education. To know more or to support Pittsburgh's adjunct faculty, give us a call at 412-562-6967 or find us on the web at usw.org. Again, that's 412-562-6967 or usw.org. Together, we can take higher education back.
The average time a resume spends on an HR manager's desk is 7 seconds, and most of them are tossed aside. Now imagine if one of those resumes belonged to Yasmin, who was
living in a shelter, juggling 3 jobs. I had to be resilient. That's something that you can't teach.
We rely so much on a resume, yet it could never tell the full story of someone who
had to be independent and take initiative, and that's how I handle every project I get.
Discover new ways to develop great talent at gradsoflife.org. Brought to you by Grads of Life and the Ad Council.
I'm more resourceful than I thought.
My suit can still make an impression.
My video games are still game changers.
And my lamp can bring others a bright future.
Because when I donate my stuff to Goodwill,
it helps fund job placement and training for people right in my community.
Now my stuff gets a second chance.
And will give someone in my community
a second chance too.
Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. That's goodwill.org. This message brought to you by Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in. We enjoy your company. We appreciate all the great stuff that you're doing for the community. This program is sponsored in part by the Mail Handlers Union, Local 322, and Teamsters Local 406, and we appreciate their support. Joining me today from West Virginia and the West Virginia AFL-CIO, we've got Josh Swart. Josh, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Josh, it's always a pleasure, brother. We appreciate it. You know, we've been talking a little bit about folks that voted for the current president during the election but may have some serious misgivings, not only about jobs and health care, but, you know, not for nothing. There's a lot of discussion about who he was having some very serious conversations with prior to the election.
Well, there's no question. There are lots of issues, excuse me, surrounding this president, and I think it's only going to get worse. I don't know what the end result will be, but people are starting to pay a little more attention, and that's a good thing, because when you have an educated citizenry, you then have educated voters, and at the end of the day, we're much better off when citizens and voters are educated on the issues versus, you know, getting their information from some news outlet that, you know, spews, you know, information that is just not true. And so, you know, we're optimistic that 2018 will be a good election year for us. We've got all of our delegates up in our legislature and half the state Senate, and we're gonna invest resources and member-to-member mobilization to get control back so that we have worker-friendly and working family-friendly legislators making decisions. You know, the Republicans have been in control here for 3 years of our state legislature, and we've seen nothing but attack after attack after attack on working families, and we're quite frankly sick of it.
I can imagine. And, you know, one of the things that you guys had to put up with was state legislator voting for right to work for laws.
Well, that was one of the first things they wanted to do, not because it makes a difference for the positive, because, you know, they know if they can cripple organized labor in any particular state or district, then they can cripple the voice of working families and the middle class in any given area. So that's what they came after. They did pass a right-to-work bill in their second year, but we've challenged it in court.
Right.
We actually got a favorable ruling. The injunction is still in place while we wait for the final order. So even though the bill passed, right-to-work is not the law of the land here. And, you know, we know this is ultimately going to go to the state Supreme Court, and we look forward to our day in court, because, This is wrong for West Virginia for a lot of different reasons. But our state constitution says that no one can take your property without consent. And that's what Right to Work does. It takes property away from local union. It takes property away from union members. And I believe our constitution says that they can't do it.
Yeah, and you guys are not the only ones. Just across the border in Kentucky, they are pushing back against that there. And quite frankly, your counterpart there, Bill Londrigan, having conversations with some pretty stalwart Republicans, those people, there were judges who were hardcore Republicans saying to Bill, you know, that's just not right. I think when we have the conversations with our friends and our neighbors and even some of our politician friends, you know, when we explain to them, you know, hey, this is not just everybody gets a job, Bill. This is what it really does. And when you explain to them, they get it. They understand it. And they kind of think about it for a minute and they go, yeah, no. No, that means, well, I get more potholes and less teachers in the classroom and less cops, paramedics, and firemen on the street. I don't want that, so we don't want to go there.
We had this issue, and it's probably like this in other states, but the Koch brothers outfit, Americans for Prosperity here in West Virginia, kept going around saying that, under a right to work scenario, labor organizations would not have to represent somebody that opted out of paying union dues. I mean, they kept saying it over and over and over again, and we proved over and over again that that's right. Not the way it is. The law of the land is that a labor organization has to represent everyone in the unit equally, regardless of whether they pay dues or fees or not. And so it was just in large part based on a lie or a lack of understanding and information about the issues. So, like I said, we look forward to our day in court, and hopefully before too long, we'll get this ruled one way or the other.
Yeah, and I'm pretty much convinced you guys are going to get a favorable ruling. Hey, Josh, what else are you guys working on?
Well, we just came out of the special sessions, plural, that dealt with the budget. So for the second year in a row, we've had a major budget debacle. In fact, our Constitution also says that the only responsibility of the legislature is to pass a balanced budget. And unfortunately, they don't seem to get it. So they waste all this time passing all this nasty stuff that hurts working families, not paying attention to the budget. So they weren't able to do it during the special session, have to extend in the special session, which cost taxpayers even more money. They just wasted about $700,000. To pass a budget that was balanced in large part to a lot of one-time money. So we're trying to figure out exactly what the impact of that budget will be for basically everyone. And here we are before too long, be going into the next legislative session with probably a $200 or $250 million budget shortfall. Well, that's a lot of money in a place like West Virginia.
Right. It's an awful lot of money for a place like West Virginia. And quite frankly, there needs to be some stuff done in West Virginia. And one of the things I keep thinking to myself, and the more I talk to my friends with United Mine Workers and others, is, I know, and most coal miners know, it's getting tougher and tougher to be a coal miner, and it's getting tougher and tougher to make a decent living or a profit from the coal mines. It's time that we start looking at doing some other things. And I'm thinking to myself, man, for $100 million, you can put up a heck of a solar cell manufacturing facility or a wind turbine facility and put a lot of those people that are very astute about building things and making things back to work in a job that's, not as dangerous and pays probably even better.
You're exactly right, Charles. In fact, organized labor has played a role in helping make that happen. The United Mine Workers, as you've mentioned, have been investing in years for retraining facilities. We just had an announcement this week by the laborers union here, where they're going to develop a training program for displaced coal miners and veterans to help train them to work on the pipeline. You know, in the northern, north central part of our state, there is an explosion of natural gas activity. We've got pipelines going everywhere, and they're looking for qualified workers for that. Well, what a great opportunity for us to train, you know, a displaced worker, whether they be a coal miner or a veteran or whatever, and get them trained to do that. The problem, though, that we see, Charles, the problem is you still have a lot of naysayers, and they're unable to admit that coal is never coming back. They believe that coal is going to come back like it was, you know, 40 years ago, and it's not going to happen. So they need to first admit that coal is not coming back like it was, and that's okay. We just need to diversify and find a way to help those folks that have been displaced because of it and move on, because betting on the come in the coal industry is not a very good bet right now.
No, but I'll tell you what, you make a solar cell in West Virginia and you make a quality product, somebody here locally within a couple hundred miles is going to knock on your door to buy it from you.
We have, Charles, you know, one of the greatest group of workers in the entire country, yeah. We believe. And our location, our proximity to, you know, literally everywhere along the East Coast makes us a perfect location to manufacture anything. It's just a matter of saying, okay, we've got to do something a little bit different here. Let's invest some resources and utilize the workers that we have before they all, you know, end up, you know, moving elsewhere to find work. It's just a matter of admitting it and then taking that first step. We've got to do it.
You know, and for me, and, you know, and for you, I'm sure also, Josh, you know, I'm thinking to myself, well, hey, you know, you talked to a guy that was a coal miner. What did you do? Oh, well, I fixed equipment and welded stuff. Okay. Gee, that sounds like you're a machinist or, you know, or a millwright or something like that. Could you put this thing together for me? Oh, yeah. Here you go. I mean, this is a no-brainer. And we've got great people, you know, from the bottom of West Virginia all the way up through Erie, Pennsylvania, going left and right 100 miles or so, that are really looking for a good, solid job. You don't have to pay them $1 million a year. Just give them a decent job. Give them some health care. And, you know, this is a winner for everybody involved.
You're exactly right, Charles. There is a ton of overlap in the skills of the workers that are in the coal mines. I mean, they can do about everything.
Right.
They can do about everything. It's just a matter of, you know, fine-tuning some of their skills and giving them an opportunity. And unfortunately, we've seen companies come in and bring workers from, you know, other places when we've got perfectly good, available, highly skilled, drug-free workers sitting on the sidelines. It's a shame, and it's one of our biggest fights awaiting us.
Hey, Josh, listen, we got to get going, brother. It's always a pleasure. We appreciate it. How do we find out more about you and the West Virginia AFL?
You can go to our Facebook page or our website at wvaflcio.org. Charles, always a great pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for having me.
There you go, brother. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon. I'm Charles Showalter. You're listening to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.